Jake from New Jersey. It's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
Hey, John Trumbull, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, Darren. How are you doing?
Doing good. Okay, witty banter, opening banter over.
Whew, that took a lot out of me.
It really did. You can't see it. I'm breaking out into hives over here. I'm sweating.
Yeah, but we don't have a ton of time for witty banter because we've got a guest in the house.
Ooh, that's right. Ladies and gentlemen, it's our great friend, good friend, our comedian friend, the man who's been with us.
I like how you immediately downgraded.
I was just gonna say that. I got trashed.
Our great friend. No, wait, that's overstating it. Our good friend.
Give it up for our acquaintance, Mr. Kevin Israel, ladies and gentlemen.
Some guy off the streets.
He responded to our email. All right.
The only person who cares enough about Ghostbusters to bring on.
That's right. Yeah, you probably remember Kevin from our previous episodes about the Ghostbusters franchise. And since there's a new Ghostbusters movie out in the theaters still, it's been out since like sometime late March, I think, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, we decided to have Kevin back on to complete the, what is it now, like a quadrilogy, something like that?
Quadrilogy, I guess they call it. But yeah, Ghostbusters Empire, Frozen Empire, we're talking about it. Came out not too long ago, March 22nd of this year. Had a budget of 100 mil, already grossed 140.
It's doing about as well as the last one, Ghostbusters Afterlife, as I recall.
Yeah, absolutely. So Kev, how's it going, man? Thanks for joining us.
It's great. Thanks for having me back. You know, I love this topic, and I was excited to get the invite. Everything's good. I'm actually I haven't had the chance to talk to anybody really about this movie, so I'm excited for this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, because, I mean, this movie came out, came out a couple of weeks ago. I don't think it's made that big a splash. I don't see too many people talking about it on the interwebs.
It was quiet. It seemed like a quiet rollout. They did do, Liberty Mutual, I think, had some tie-in. I've seen the commercials that had something to do with Ghostbusters. But there wasn't like a big, you know, I don't remember seeing any of the stars on the talk shows, or, you know, that none of them hosted SNL to your
I've seen them make a few late night appearances. I think they were on Jimmy Fallon show, if I remember correctly. Okay.
Of course, Fallon fawned over them. It's like, oh my God, Ghostbusters, that's totally great.
Best movie ever.
Yeah. And I did watch like a morning show clip of them. I think it was either on Today or maybe it was a Good Morning America. It was a little while ago since I watched it. So, but
well, if it was the entire cast, they must have had seven rooms for it.
Yeah, I mean, it was Paul Rudd and McKenna Grace, and they were appearing with the original Ghostbusters, and Annie Potts was there too. So it was a pretty full showing. Yeah. And now, Kevin, I seem to recall you recently, I think in the lead up to this movie, you rewatched Ghostbusters Afterlife for like the first time since it was out. And I think you revised your opinion of it a little bit, as I recall.
Yeah, you know what? I definitely think it's one of those movies that I don't want to say it ages well, but I think it ages better. I mean, it definitely I left the movie theater with, you know, not feeling great about it. And on rewatch, you have to. And I don't want to get into the Frozen Empire movie, but I think with what they're doing with the franchise now, you kind of have to remove yourself from the original movie a little bit and say, this is something different, and I need to look at it through that lens and not through the lens of 84. Because if you do that, you're going to feel the way that I did when I walked out of Afterlife. And so on rewatch, I just kind of put it would just happen to be on cable, whatever channel, and I said, oh, you know what? It had just started. And I said, I just got caught into watching it. And I think I watched the entire thing. And I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. And I didn't think that, oh man, I was so wrong. But it wasn't terrible. They did a good job introducing the characters. You know, the movie moves at a pretty good pace. The third act gets a little stale and you know, fan servicey. And there were definitely some of the plot weaknesses that I discussed last time, I think still hold up, but it was better for me, and it felt less bad, I guess I would say.
Yeah. Cause you were, I haven't listened back to the episode we did on Afterlife, but you were pretty down on it. I gave it a fairly positive review, as I recall. I enjoyed it more than I didn't. And I mean, how did you guys feel about this one in general?
I'll let our guests go first, though. Kevin, what were your thoughts on it? I have some thoughts.
Mm-hmm. It was terrible.
Okay.
It was a mess of a movie, and everything that I thought that it redeemed itself for, that Afterlife redeemed itself on second watch, they ruined in this movie. Mm. It was just a mess of a story. It was way too many characters.
I agree with you.
And not only did they have the whole slew of characters from the last movie, they introduced more characters who I don't know if you were supposed to care about or not. I was hoping they were like the red suits from Star Trek that were just going to get killed. Uh-huh. But they didn't. And it was just a mess of a movie. And the problem with all of these, with these movies, I think since the first one, is that they don't focus enough on the antagonist. Mm. And there's not enough buildup about the antagonist. In the first movie, the buildup to Gozer is a big deal. And, you know, Zool is terrifying, and you get that whole feeling of the ominous feeling in the buildup. And then when Gozer comes, that scene on the top of the building is genuinely, and it still holds up, is a creepy scene. Mm-hmm. When this voice comes out of nowhere and says, you get to choose how you're going to die. Like, that's a creepy idea. And it's done really well. In this movie, it was just like, yeah, there's an ice guy and he's coming to get you. And oh, here he is. And it just felt so lazy and so messy. The whole movie was just sloppy.
I would agree with most of that. Like, I didn't hate it as much as you did, but I definitely felt the movie was kind of more. It was kind of bland a little bit. Like, I will admit, like, the big bad in this really wasn't built up in a way it should have. Like, it should be like this really big threat. It didn't really kind of feel that way. And I don't know. Like, also, I kind of felt like a lot of the OG characters from the movie, they still haven't like really fleshed out those characters quite a bit. Like, you know, like Winston and Janine, they just seem to be there just to give exposition. And like, I want to care about those characters more. Like, you care about them because of the nostalgia factor, but like, that's kind of it. Like, I want them to be more fleshed out as characters, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. Trumbull, what were your thoughts?
I was okay on it overall. I liked it, but I do recognize it has problems. But like, when I walked out of the theater, I didn't really feel like I wasted my money. I enjoyed it for the most part. I certainly agree it has way too many characters. I don't really think we needed to bring back everybody from Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Yeah.
Because the movie starts out and we've got Carrie Coon as Egon's daughter and McKenna Grace as his granddaughter. And we find out that, you know, she and Paul Rudd's character and Finn Wolfhard's character, they've all moved into the city and they are going into business as Ghostbusters themselves.
Yeah.
And so we have all those four back. And then, of course, we have the original Ghostbusters back. And then, you know, we also have podcast back. We also have what's her face, who was like Finn Wolfhard's little love interest from the restaurant that they worked at.
Lucky.
Yeah, and I don't know if we needed everybody back. You know, who've just, they've now moved from Oklahoma to New York City.
Yeah,
that was a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I get the because like the fact that they kind of explain why Podcast was there, because Podcast and Lucky, they were there for the summer. Like, right. Lucky was there for an internship with Winston. I was like, all right, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Podcast was there for the summer. hanging out with Ray, but he told his parents something else. He was at space camp. I was like, okay, I can buy that. I don't know. The fact that Egon's descendants and Gary just all picked up and moved to New York City, that was a little bit hard for me to believe, I guess.
I think it was weird in the regard that, like, because as I recall, a big thing in Afterlife was they moved out to Oklahoma was because they couldn't afford to stay
right
where they were. So, like, suddenly, I don't know, I guess ghostbusting is a stable enough business model that you can now afford to live in Manhattan.
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming maybe Winston's picking up the check for
the rent.
I guess
he is, yeah. Because Winston has become kind of a mogul.
Yeah.
And which, like, is also between. Just out of it. It feels like the plots of these movies or the screenplays, there were like five people in separate rooms all writing stuff. And then they handed it to one guy and said, now put this all together. Mm-hmm. And he did so without ever trying to, like, explain anything. Because, like, there's interesting things that they could have explored. Like, how did Winston get so rich? They talk about it very briefly, but they give it short shrift and that's it. And mm-hmm. so now he's got this company. And he's, or whatever he did, and he's very wealthy. And now he's just going to be the financial backer of the Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And you just take it. Just take it because we said so. Okay. Yeah. And then they go and they move into the firehouse. And at some point in this last movie, they said something about how this firehouse is a central location for something. They give it some supernatural feeling that for some reason this is the place where things have to happen. But then they never explain that. They never go into that again. That's why we're here. Okay. And again, audience, just take it because we said so. Mm-hmm. And then it's just throwing all these things at you. Like, one of the things that really bothered me that felt just so weak was that, okay, so the Ghostbusters, the team we know is the new Ghostbusters are working out of the fire station. But then meanwhile, Winston has this, like, secret lab where they're developing on this stuff. Why would he have kept that a secret from them? What purpose did that secret serve? If he was coming up with better stuff for them to use, like, why wouldn't they have been wrapped into that? That makes mm-hmm. absolutely no sense. It was a secret for no reason other than to be like, see, audience, there's stuff going on behind the scenes. And we're just supposed to go, ooh, and not go, well, why? And it was just a stupid plot point that could have been, it would have been made much more interesting if Winston had said, all right, I'm a businessman now. I'm going to run Ghostbusters like a business. And now there aren't just four Ghostbusters. Now we have an entire franchise of Ghostbusters, and there are Ghostbusters mm-hmm. throughout the country. And we have a laboratory where we're developing. And you guys, Paul Rudd and crew, are the New York franchise of the Ghostbusters. But you're going to be, here's all the franchise stuff you have to do. Like, that would have felt a little more interesting, like Ghostbusters as a national business, as opposed to, like, there's still a little Ghostbusters where a firehouse, but then there's this other thing. Like, it just felt like they didn't spend any time to think of what's the next logical step for this. What's the next interesting aspect we could explore about this enterprise?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, because they are still the only Ghostbusters, like, literally in the world in this universe. Like, you don't hear of any other branches or outside of this one. There's just one little firehouse.
And there's no ghosts anywhere else?
Yeah, that makes sense. No, they're all in New York. Yeah, they're all in New York City.
Exactly.
Yeah, I really liked the opening scene. I liked how it started with the new Ghostbusters just, driving around town on the Ecto-1. And, we're seeing them going after ghosts. And I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought because people just came home and we have dogs going.
I was like, that's dog sound.
Yeah, yeah. So let me backtrack on my train of thought a little bit. I really like the opening scene where we're seeing, Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon and the new Ghostbusters. They're running around in the Ecto-1 and they're going after ghosts. And we're seeing some of the new equipment, I think most of which was established in the last movie, but I still think of it as new equipment. And we see how, like, their techniques have kind of evolved. You know, we've got the jump seat coming out of the Ecto-1. We've got them releasing a ghost trap in a drone, which I thought was really cool. I was like, oh, that's a neat idea. And that's, you know, kind of bringing the Ghostbusters into the 21st century a little bit. And, you know, they have the other trap on wheels on like a little scooter thing that we're releasing from the bottom of the Ecto-1. And I thought that was really neat. And then as the movie went on, it began to meander a bit, and it was going in a lot of different directions.
Yeah.
And about halfway through the movie, at the beginning, I was like, oh, I'm really enjoying this. This is a good Ghostbusters movie. And then by about halfway through, I was like, I feel like we've lost the thread a little bit.
Right.
And yeah. I mean, and I wasn't disliking the movie. It has its moments throughout. I mean, there's stuff I like, but it is going off in a lot of different directions. Like, you know, we see like Finn Wolfhard, like his one subplot is basically he's trying to capture Slimer in the firehouse. And yeah. I don't know what purpose that served other than to give Finn Wolfhard stuff to do.
And to say, hey, there's Slimer. Remember him?
Yeah, like I really felt like Finn Wolfhard scene, like those are basically just stuff just for the trailer. Like he really doesn't have much, like because like even in the Afterlife, his whole thing was he was a driver. He was like the hot rod head that loved to drive around the Ecto. He doesn't even get to do that.
He gets to drive it like at the end, and it's like,
yeah,
and it's like a big deal because I think he's just officially gotten his license. No, he's arguing like, oh no, I'm 18 now, I'm a man, and. Right.
And you know what? And by the way, if he's a hot rod head, like it's okay. We had Ghostbusters Afterlife, which serves as the transition from the old to the new guard. Mm-hmm. So it's okay now if we have some new stuff. Like the idea of them driving around still in this old beat up Ecto-1, which by the way is one of my favorite hero cars in movie history. And I think anybody would probably agree with that. But it's okay. Like, they could have a new car now. They could have a badass SUV or something. Like, Batman upgraded the Batmobile as the years went on.
Yeah,
they can have a new car. And Winston is this multimillionaire, and he hasn't bought them a new, like, come on. Get, you know, a Dodge Charger that's all souped up or something. Like, something cool. Like to give us a feel that, like, okay, this is Ghostbusters, but it's moving on. It's moving on from where it was, and this is the new... This is a new feel. And the other thing I noticed about the movie that I forgot to say earlier, when I was in the theater, my wife and I went to see it, and there were a lot of kids in the movie theater, like a lot of little kids, like 7-8-year-olds. And my sister took me to see it in 1984. And I remember her, as we sat down, going, oh, you're the only kid in the movie theater. Now, I think the original Ghostbusters, I think, was PG, or was it PG-13? I think it was
PG. I believe it was PG. I don't think PG-13 quite existed.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think it did. But it look, and I've said this dozens of times whenever I talk about the original Ghostbusters. It had, especially at the time, a horror sci-fi aspect to it that had that. It really did have that feeling. It had a few good jump scares. It had a very eerie feeling about the movie, and it did a very good job of incorporating the comedy into that. While the scene with the devil dog in the party, and then tracking down Lewis Tully at Tavern on the Green, like that's a creepy scene. Like, you know, he gets at the time you think maybe
and it ends on a big laugh too,
right? Yeah, right. And so there's a, and these movies, these newer movies have none of that. They have nothing that at any point felt ominous or dangerous. And these are now family movies. And that was my greater point that I was trying to get to. There were kids in the movie theater. And I think a lot of parents who were probably my age, it just didn't wait as long as I did to have kids, who have kids who are, you know, 8 to 12 or whatever, saying, oh, I'll take them to see this. And the producers of that movie know that, of these movies. And they said, okay, well, we need to make a more family-friendly franchise. And that's what they did. It's very watered down. I would not call it adult comedy. It's definitely got no adult comedy to it. Like, in the original, Peter Venkman's entire motivation in that movie was to bang Sigourney Weaver. Like that was, I mean, he never came out right and said that, but we all knew it. Like that's he was a dog. He was trying to bang the co-ed that was, you know, he was testing on in the beginning of the movie. Like that was, he was a dog. And that was something that was a, and it rode throughout the whole movie, and they could never do that in a movie today with this, or this, at least the franchise they're making it now. These are very family friendly movies, and that's fine, but you have to go into it knowing that. But also, if you're going to do that and you're going to lean all the way into it, you should still give us a coherent plot and something that we can sink our teeth into a little bit.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. That totally tracks. Like, I feel like it. Yeah, I see what you mean. I agree with you. Like, the plots kind of seem to go all over the place, because like we said, we had the thing with Trevor trying, like, his only reason to be in this movie was to chase Slimer. And then we have Phoebe's kind of subplot where she kind of makes friends with this ghost, Melody, in the park when they're playing chess. And this, we find out, like, Melody was this girl around her age who kind of died in a stray fire. And then they sort of strike up a friendship that, maybe, like, it seemed like they hint in the movie, it was kind of like almost romantic too.
There was definitely that subtext, and honestly, 100%. I wish they'd been gutsy enough to go a little further with it. And,
totally, you know, agree with you.
Have them, have it. I'm like, you know, it's 2024. Why are we playing this as subtext? If you want to make the Phoebe character gay, make her gay,
right?
And just you know, have them even just exchanging a kiss or something. Like, what? Yep. I just didn't see the point in being ambiguous about it.
It was, you know what? And it almost stood out to me more in that they didn't go all the way with it, because it was almost like, why are you making me do this work?
That's a good way to put it.
Don't make
we
me
shouldn't
make
have
her
to fill
gay.
In the blanks anymore.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, right. If a character's gay, they're gay. Like, don't make me sit and be like, is she gay? Am I supposed to feel bad because I think she might be gay? Like, are you making me a bad person? Because, like, no, just make her gay. Like, it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, I can't think of anything that was in the first movie that would preclude her being gay or anything like that. And I will say, like, McKenna Grace is still one of the highlights of these new Ghostbusters movies. She is wonderful. She's a great actress. I totally buy her as Egon's granddaughter. And, you know, I love how they've made her up, because, like, when I see her on the talk shows, she looks very different.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't wear glasses. She's blonde in real life. And I'm like, that's the same actress, but she's just wonderful. I can't say enough good things about McKenna Grace, man.
Yeah.
I would have loved if the movie either focused in on more, or was entirely just a her and Ray Stantz movie. Mm-hmm. I thought the two of them had fun chemistry together.
They did.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought that was that could have been a really interesting way to go. Like, she's learning to be a Ghostbuster, and Ray takes her under his wing and starts, like, showing him the way and, like, whatever. Like, that would have, like, a buddy cop almost type of movie. Like, that would have been fun. But they gave us, like, a little bits of it, and it stood out. It's funny. When Darren brought up the ghost girl, whose name I don't even remember.
Melody.
I completely forgot about that already. I totally forgot about that.
Because there's so many different subplots in this movie, and they don't really converge until the end. And not in, like, a Swiss watch sort of way, and just a sort of meandering, like, how are these connected sort of way?
Right.
And, you know, the other, I would say, if I had a big disappointment with the film, it wasn't quite as funny as I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
It didn't make me laugh too much. The first time in the movie I laughed aloud was when they're touring Winston's new facility, and they're analyzing various ghostly apparatus. And he makes a comment about, like, a possessed spin doctor's CD. I was like, oh, okay, that's funny. That made me laugh as a Gen Xer.
Yeah.
I was like, ha! That just tickled me. And then there was a bit towards the end when we're having our big showdown in the firehouse, and, you know, we have Kumail Nanjiani's character, who's a pyrotechnic guy.
Firefighter.
forgot about
he
him.
He, like, generates fire. or controls flames, I guess. And like, he needs a light because, like, the lighter fluid has run out on the lighter he was using. And they're like, does anybody have a cigarette lighter? And then Ray says, oh, I quit in the 90s. And then Bill Murray just goes, proud of you then. proud of you now. And it's in the middle of the final firefight. And Bill Murray just like wonderfully throws that away. That amused me. Those I think were the two biggest gags in the movie. And other than that, there weren't too many gags that made me laugh, you know?
Yeah, I will admit that. Like, I did think there'd be more funny parts because it has a few funny people. I mean, like you said, it had Kumail in it, and it had Patton Oswalt in it. But even like his scene was okay, but it wasn't like I don't know. I thought he would
Patton had to deliver a whole gob of exposition, and that was mainly what they had him do.
Yep,
so much exposition,
yep. which seems like a bit of a waste of Patton Oswalt.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, John.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had another random thought, so you go ahead, because you're probably going to continue the current thought.
You brought up two great points that were also problems for me. First of all, I forgot about Kumail being in it. Also, that he felt so shoehorned into this movie that they looked at the cast and they were like, we need somebody who's got some real comedy credentials. And who's a funny guy? Kumail. And he's just going to be a stereotypical Indian guy who's got the accent and has some history dating back to some time somewhere. And we're just going to have him do some funny stuff. And it felt like such an afterthought. It felt like he was really tagged on after the movie was made. And he just didn't work in the movie. He didn't have any chemistry with any of the cast. He was introduced. It was such a clunky introduction. That he like, oh, I have the thing, you know, I have the thing that the MacGuffin that we're all going to be worried about. I really thought he was bad, and not Kumail. It's not his fault. I'm sure he got paid very nicely and walked away happy. But the character was written very poorly. That plot point was a mess. He was suddenly, you know, now suddenly there's Avengers in the Ghostbusters, and it's. That was a weak point for me. Also a weak point for me was, and I hate to say this, and it hurts to say this, was Bill Murray. He felt like they literally were tape filming and they were like, hey, go knock on Bill's door and see if he'll do this scene. And they went and got him and he had sunglasses on and he was like, I'm not taking these off. And they're like, but it's night and it's dark and you're about to get, and he's like, no, I'm good. It's cool. I'm keeping them on. He mailed his appearance in this movie so bad, and they clearly knew that he was going to, because he barely was written into the movie.
Had the least to do of the three original Ghostbusters that we had in the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
And they tried giving him that one scene where he was, you know, with him and Kumail, and like give that it almost was that like the old comedy guard passing the torch to the new, no pun intended, passing the torch to the new comedy guard. It just didn't work. It felt like the scene in Caddyshack where it was Bill Murray and Chevy Chase, and like that iconic scene where the two of them came together for the one scene they taped together. It almost felt like it was like a wink and a nod to that. Like, look at these two comedy guys. This is going to be funny, and it wasn't. And it just feels like everything they tried to do this movie was poorly done. And the only thing I can compare it to, and it's not going to make any sense when I first say it, is the Eternals. Because they tried to jam so much stuff into this movie that would have been better as a TV show.
I've been saying that since I saw the Eternals in the theater. Yeah.
And the Eternals 1,000,000,000% should have been a TV show. Yeah. I'm sure at some point somebody said that on the set or when writing the script, and they just said, no, we don't have time to do that or whatever. But it feels like now Ghostbusters. Do you guys remember the show from the, I don't remember if it was the late 80s or early 90s, the Friday the 13th show?
The syndicated one?
Yeah. It had nothing to do with Friday the
13th.
It was a show about, it had nothing to do with Jason Voorhees at all.
Right.
It was just a show. I don't even know why they called it.
There was like an old scientist or an old librarian, and you had two young people, and then there was like mystical, spooky stuff going on, right?
Yes. It was an old guy, and I think his grandchildren, and he had this store that was full of haunted, cursed items. They were cursed items, and it was their job to go around and collect, find more of these cursed items and bring them back to the store, because once they were in the store they couldn't hurt anybody. And so every episode was about them going out and finding one of these cursed items, and it was I think I watched the entire show when I was a kid. I can't remember when it was, but it almost feels like that's what Ghostbusters should be now. Give them a show where every episode they go out and they bust a ghost or they do something, and you can have different characters featured in different episodes. You know, you can focus on all these different, this different cast, and do that. And have it, you know, you can have an overarching plot because nobody does the, you know, the standalone episodes anymore, but do that. But these movies are, if you're going to continue to try to make these movies this amalgamation of 19 different plots and subplots, it's just going to be a mess.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're talking about the cartoon show, the real Ghostbusters.
Yeah, and that's why the cartoon show was so great. It, every episode was, you know, was really self-contained. They did a very good job of establishing the characters, making them feel a little different than the movie, but enough that you recognize that if you were an adult watching it. And I think there sometimes were some overriding strings through the episodes that connected some of them together. But this show was, they did, I loved, I haven't watched that show in a long time, but I loved that show as a kid.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah, you would have been just the right age for it.
Yeah, it was, that was right in my wheelhouse.
Because you would hit when you were like probably around 12 or something, yep, which is exactly about the age I was when I saw the original film. You know, one thing I kind of wish they'd done is, I wish that the original Ghostbusters, I wish they'd given them all more of an entrance. Like, the way they were each introduced into the film just seemed very pedestrian. Mm. You know, they were like after they talked to Kumail Nanjiani's character, they're like, okay, well, we're gonna bring somebody in for you to talk to. And then just suddenly it's like just Bill Murray's there. And there's no sort of fanfare about it. He doesn't have a funny entrance line or anything. He's just there and he's doing the reading, you know, and Kumail's got the Lewis Tully colander on his head, and they're doing that reading again. So it felt like a bit of a rehash scene because it was very close to what, you know, things we've seen before.
Right.
In that. And I'm just like, you know, okay, well, first, why is Bill Murray the one administering this? Mm. This was never his thing. I guess it was an Egon thing before, but you know, I also thought that with Winston and Ray, I wish they'd each gotten more of an entrance. Cause like in the last film, it was them all showing up was like the grand finale. So they all had a group entrance, but I feel like it was a missed opportunity to not give them each a more memorable entrances, you know?
Yeah. It almost feels like, I mean, there were two other old school OG, as they say, mm-hmm. People that were mm-hmm. in this movie that I feel like they got bigger entrances. Like one was the guy that, I won't say ran the library, but the head of the library from the original movie.
Yeah.
And Mr. Walter Peck, who is now the city mayor. Yes. It seemed like they got more of a bigger.
We haven't talked about that. How did you guys like seeing Peck in there again?
It was all
terrible. Right.
I was expecting more of a reaction. I thought that was a nice twist of bringing him in, and then now he's the mayor of New York City, and he's still got his anti-Ghostbusters vendetta. And he basically comes down on them after the first scene, and he's like, you know, you, Phoebe Spengler, you cannot be a Ghostbuster because you're underage. And she's like, how old is she supposed to be? Like 16 now, something like that?
15.
Okay. And so that kind of sets her arc in motion, is that she can't officially be a Ghostbuster, but she wants to prove herself as worthy of being a Ghostbuster.
Right.
And I thought that was a good arc for her. I feel like if it's anybody's movie, it's Phoebe's movie. I felt like they didn't really give Paul Rudd or Carrie Coon much to do at all. Like Paul Rudd kind of has the subplot of, like, he's basically a surrogate father to these kids now, and his struggle is that he's not much of a disciplinarian because he's not their actual father, so he doesn't feel entirely comfortable with that. But
I'm gonna draw another analogy that's not gonna make sense when I say it at first.
I mean, we expect nothing less.
I have this very well thought out theory about Stifler in the American Pie movies.
Go mm-hmm. on.
And if you watch them all in sequence, which you should never do.
No, I mean, you will hate humanity at the end of that.
You will see, you'll notice that Stifler evolves in a very strange way. He goes from being kind of a dickhead jock,
mm-hmm.
the character that we all know. We all knew that guy in high school.
Right.
And it was very identifiable. He was just likable enough not to like completely hate him, but he was just a like a douchey jock. Mm-hmm. And that rode through the first two movies. Right. And then suddenly he just becomes a moron. Like,
yes,
like
yes. Mentally he got flanderized.
Mentally disabled.
TV tropes people say.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is. So, and by American Wedding or whatever the one after it was, mm-hmm. It's like, oh, he must have had a stroke or something. And he's handicapped. Yes. Like and it's just such a strange, and I keep in touch with some of those people, strangely enough, who I didn't like in high school, who were those kind of dickhead jocks, and actually almost to a one, they've evolved into sort of better people. Some of mm-hmm. them, the one or two stayed, you know, kind of douchey, but they didn't become the R word, which I'm not going to say, but we all know what I'm saying.
Classic.
You know, I'm not trying to get into a dissertation on American Pie, but I feel like that's what they did with Paul Rudd.
Mission failed.
That's what they did with Paul Rudd in this movie. He went from kind of being this like quirky, funny, like cool teacher guy.
He's a seismologist, as I recall.
Yeah, he's a scientist. He was supposed to be very smart. He goes to being this like awkward, overly goofy sort of dad figure, and I get that he's had the struggle of like, what am I in this family, which is fine, but mm-hmm. his jokes and his personality just became so, they were like, oh, you liked him, you liked that stuff, well, we're gonna do it 100 times more in this one, and yeah. it's just like, no, more isn't always better,
right?
You don't always have to turn the volume up to 11. No. Like, it's okay. And yeah. they did that with him, and I thought he felt, I didn't laugh once at Paul Rudd.
Mm.
And and Paul Rudd is great in the Marvel movies as comic relief. He does a great job of fitting and existing with all those very serious characters and those very serious situations, and still feeling like, oh, he's the guy who would be cracking jokes. Because yeah. I always say, you know, whenever there's movies that take themselves too seriously, I always think like, there's nobody who's cracking jokes at this. Like, there's always somebody whose nervous response to things is poorly timed humor. Like, that exists. Yes.
And, absolutely.
And when movies don't acknowledge that, it sometimes becomes, it's almost like, okay, somebody would be really breaking the tension here. And that's what Paul Rudd feels like, you know, his Ant-Man does in the Marvel.
I mean, and that was, you know, Bill Murray's basic function as Peter Venkman in the original movies. He always had a quip.
Right. 100%. And you could tell that it was a defense mechanism for that character.
Mm-hmm.
And it made sense. And in this movie, in Frozen Empire, Frozen Kingdom, Frozen whatever it was
called. Frozen Empire, you got it right the first time.
It just felt like Paul Rudd was just turned into this, like, he's a goofy dad now. Look at him. He's so dumb and awkward. He doesn't get anything with these kids. And I was just like, why did you do that? Why did you mm-hmm. have to do that with him? And again, I think it's just to feed into, well, this is a family movie now, so kids are going to be like, oh, dad.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Like, I think it is a thing where they kind of maybe didn't quite understand why people like his character so much, or why they think they like Paul Rudd so much that they like, oh, they like him because he's goofy, dopey guy. So we'll just turn that up and they'll like him more. Like, I kind of saw the same thing. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys watched Friends back in the day, mm-hmm. but like, I kind of saw them do the same thing to Joey.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Joey definitely got stupider as that show went on.
He got so dumb.
Well, it's because it's like on sitcoms especially, you're always sort of steering into the curve. And I think what happened with Friends was like somebody said in the first season, like, oh, you know, Matt LeBlanc plays dumb really well. And so, you know, then they discovered that over the course of the first season. And then they start writing to that more. And as you write a dumb person, you can't help over time but make them dumber and dumber and dumber. That's just going to happen, especially on a long-running sitcom like that. So, like, yeah, by the end, it's like, did you get lobotomized between seasons or something? Like, what happened to you?
Yep.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And it's like, and it's also, and like the, like Batman's voice in the Nolan's movies. Like, each movie is, and voice got gravelier and deeper, and it was just, and you know, there's always stories all over the place that, well, that's what Nolan was asking for. But regardless, it's noticeable. Right. And why did you have to lean so hard into that?
Yeah, I mean, as I recall, like, he had a very growly voice in the first film, and we will get back to Ghostbusters eventually, I promise you. But by the second film, it got so exaggerated and gravelly. I remember that first scene where, like, he takes down the sort of self-deputized Batman in his opening scene, and one of them goes like, "What's the difference between me and you?" And Batman says, "I'm not wearing hockey pads."
Yep.
That's the line. But what Christian Bale said was like, "I'm not wearing hockey pads." And I was like, what did he say? I have no idea. Because apparently Christopher Nolan doesn't like looping his movies. So like whatever crappy sounds he gets on the day, that's just how that movie is sounding now. Yeah. And
Pete, Pete Holmes does a great series making fun.
Oh, yes.
Like he does the best Batman, Nolan Batman impressions and mocking. And it's just, it's
and he also utterly nails Christian Bale's habit of keeping his mouth open like a doofus. Where like so many scenes, his mouth is just hanging open. And I'm just like, why do you let him do it? It does not look good. It just makes him look like a simpleton. But anyway, I've often said this podcast could turn into a Batman podcast at the drop of a hat. And
here we are.
I just proved that again.
But I think the point is, and I will try to rein it back for you, John.
Okay.
I think the point is that oftentimes the directors or writers or whoever makes these decisions see something that works and goes, we just need more of that. Mm-hmm. And for me, Paul Rudd's character really was wasted because he didn't really have a lot of point in the movie outside of just being the goofy dad. And then his comedy, you know, presence was just awkward and weird, and it never felt like it fit. Like, you know, it's funny. You could probably do like a whole analysis of like how comedy movies have evolved over time. And, you know, there's a lot of people who say, well, the comedy movie is dead. Like they don't make good comedies anymore. They're not big money makers. There's also the risk of, you know, writing a joke that's going to offend somebody, that's going to turn everybody off. So comedies just aren't worth the risk. But if you look at comedies like back in the 80s, when I really think was like the late 70s through 80s, it's really the peak of comedy movies. The jokes that were told in the movies a lot of times were also supposed to be jokes between the characters. Like they were funny lines that existed also within the context of the dialogue. It wasn't just like looking at the audience and being like, get it. It was a dialogue joke. It was an exchange. Like the characters would have been laughing too. And now it feels like when they write all these jokes, it's just jokes that exist for just like, this is for you guys watching. This isn't happening here. This nobody's going to wonder why I said that. Mm-hmm. And it comes off very, and that's why I think like almost like, and now I'm going to go off on another tangent, but that's why like Deadpool is so refreshing because he does it and he's doing it out front. He's saying the quiet part out loud. Yeah. He's doing, and he's making the joke and he's going, yeah, I'm talking to you. And you know I'm talking to you because I'm telling you that I'm talking to you. And that feels almost like, oh, okay, that's better. But a lot of times these movies, and I think it's on display here, and I can't come up with any specific examples because I saw it once 2.5 weeks ago. But the jokes don't land as though they're jokes within the context of the dialogue and between the characters. They're just funny stuff that's like, this is the audience will like this. We're going to do this.
Oh, I can think of one. They put it in the trailer where it's like Paul Rudd's character and the mom, Callie, are like talking about like maybe getting out of ghostbusting because like I think that's when Walter Peck kind of comes down on them like the dean in Animal House is like, oh, I'm shutting this house.
Ghostbusters are on double secret probation.
Yeah, and then Paul Rudd's character says, no, we have to fight for this house, you know, busting, and then he starts saying, you know.
He's quoting to the theme song. Yeah.
Boston makes me feel good. And like, that's something that doesn't quite, I mean, I guess it makes sense.
And she's like, don't say it. I thought they played that moment about as well as you could. I did think it was very interesting that this movie actually canonized the Ghostbusters music video from Ray Parker Jr. At one point, we're seeing the original Ghostbusters strutting down New York Street. Right. Down Times Square with Ray Parker, and I was like, "Oh, that's an in-universe thing now."
Yeah, I also liked how they included some old commercials from like the Ghostbusters toys and the cereal. Mm-hmm. I was like, "Oh, okay, I guess."
But you know what? I would have liked to see like that moment where we saw the video, the music video. If Ray or Peter was there and was like, "Ugh, I hated having to do that." or something like some like
we never got any residuals for that.
Right. Right.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It was all just like fan servicey. Like, here, you guys want the old stuff? Here's the old stuff. Take it. We're not even going to try to write something around this. It just goes back to this. It was just a really lazy, messy script that I'm sure got hacked up a million times as it went through the process and probably started off as something different. But it was just bad for me.
Fair enough. And I will agree. Like, I guess another quibble I have about it is like how it seemed very convoluted, the whole thing about the main ghost and how he came to be and the Adventurer Society waking up Garaka and that whole whole backstory. It seemed like a lot, like how, and then they had the chant that the Adventure Society got to awaken him on this little like microfiche or this cylinder device, and then that became a thing. They had to like chase that down because one of the ghosts escaped from Winston,
and they get that through Patton Oswalt's character, as I recall.
Yes, who's like the head of the library.
Yeah,
and I don't know, like the whole them bringing up another new ghost, Garaka, and his whole backstory. I don't know. It seemed like a little. It was a little. I mean, it seemed like a little tough to follow for me. I don't know.
But was it just? It's not even that it's just tough to follow, which you're right, it is. But it's also that, like, why do they keep doing the same formula? Where there's this big bad ghost that had worshippers that's trying to come back, do something different. Would make the Ghostbusters do. There's plenty of ghost stories and ghost movies out there that you could use as a basis for. Like, why don't they go deal with like a haunted house? Like, there's a house somewhere. It doesn't have to be a global disaster. It could just be there's a haunted house and somebody's trapped in it and they have to go save somebody from the haunted house. Or there's an undead axe murderer terrorizing a town and they have to go stop him and figure out what's going on. Like, give us just a smaller, sort of insulated Ghostbuster story about them solving somebody's problem.
I think there was even an episode of the Real Ghostbusters cartoon where they screwed up a Christmas Carol somehow, because I think they busted Marley's ghost or something like
that.
And I'm like, when I first heard that, I was like, that's a really creative idea. I mean, that's the sort of stuff you should be doing with the Ghostbusters. I mean, there are so many ghost stories out there. And I mean, hell, just, pick Dan Aykroyd's brain for a half hour and sure he could come up with like some real ghost lore that you could base a movie around.
Yeah. But no, that is a good point, Kevin. Like I didn't even realize it until now it's always like some big ghost who's trying to come back from the dead and take his vengeance out on humanity and like, take over the world. It's always like a world ending, life threatening event.
Right. It doesn't have to be global stakes. It can just be,
right,
this is the day in the life of the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, that could be fun. But I guess there's the expectation that it has to be a big effects extravaganza and you have to have the threat bigger and bigger. And you fall into that trap a lot in sequels.
Mm.
A thing I would like to see, and this is something that like Sigourney Weaver has been proposing for years, is I would like to see what her kid Oscar is doing these days. Because, he was a baby in Ghostbusters 2. So the kid would be about 35 now. And it's the perfect age for him to, come in and be a Ghostbuster himself.
Yes.
And it just, as soon as she first proposed that, I was like, that's the best idea I've ever heard. Is, Oscar's grown up and now he's a Ghostbuster. And I want to see what that kid became, because presumably he was raised by Dana and Venkman.
Yeah.
And he's never even mentioned in any of these modern movies.
Yeah. Why can't that kid be one of the people working at Winston's new facility?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how fun would that be for the long-term fans? Is you have a grown-up Oscar and, you cast some current comedy star as Oscar.
John, we don't need any more characters.
I know. I would do that, and I would take out some of the other characters. I don't think we really needed Podcast or Lucky in there.
The love interest, Finn Wolfhard's love interest.
Lucky.
Yeah. Lucky. Oh, the Lucky, right. I forgot that was her.
Yeah, name. she didn't do anything in this.
And she was just, and that was a really sloppy introduction. Like, they're just, oh, there she is. Oh, I didn't know you're here. Oh, yeah. It's come on.
Everybody yeah, ends up. I'm working here in the same city as you, and I never bothered to get in touch with you. Which kind of puts Finn Wolfhard in his place. Right. She's like, oh, okay. Message received. Oh, all right.
It's like, that was just summer love, baby.
I thought we had something, but. Nah. But hey, it's nice that Carrie Coon and Paul Rudd's characters made a go of it.
Yeah, I guess, they're in it for the long... I guess that was another thing that kind of was like, oh, wait, so this guy is just going to pick up his whole life and move to New York with his girlfriend? All right.
Darren, once you've had possessed ghost dog sex...
the you best know,
you,
kind.
You don't go back. That's... You gotta lock that shit down. Yes.
Insert doggy style joke here.
Yes. Oh boy. You know, one thing this is probably a relatively minor thing, but one thing I really liked was it gave us a really nice sense of the firehouse and how it was laid out. And I loved seeing the other floors of the firehouse and getting a better sense of the layout of the entire structure than in any of the other Ghostbusters movies. I mean, before we saw just certain rooms, but we never were like, oh, okay. So the basement area where the ghost containment unit is, that's right below the reception area. And then, you know, up there, we've got like two more floors that are living areas. And then there's the attic area where Slimer was apparently hanging out. I really like that. They did a really nice job of establishing that layout and fixing it in the viewer's heads.
Yes.
So I will.
Well, apparently, give a tip John, of the hat to that. Apparently you didn't have the Ghostbusters firehouse play set.
I did not.
You would know how everything was laid out.
Ooh, somebody has money. Had money.
No, I actually didn't.
Oh, okay.
you just admired it from afar.
Yeah, one of my friends did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody. Your friend.
Were you friends with him only because of that place?
No, he had that and the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier.
Well, that's enough to base a friendship.
Yeah.
On.
I mean,
sure.
What more do you need?
Yes.
Yeah.
Friends for
yeah.
life.
And if he also had like a Millennium Falcon place.
Oh yes.
I mean,
He had everything. It all. He had it all.
Yeah. Nice.
You never forget that one friend that had all the toys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had actually stuff in boxes that he hadn't even taken out yet. He had, I want to say it was an X-Wing in a box.
Ooh.
And it was just like he had so much. But I mean, I actually hope he kept it and he still has it in a box somewhere because that's worth thousands of dollars. But
be good for him.
But I remember as a little kid, his family was loaded. And it was my first time where I suddenly became aware of like money and finances and that like, oh, parents have different money. Like his parents have things that my parents don't. And I remember I was thinking about it on the drive home, like, and I kept wanting to ask my mom, but I knew I must have been like 9 and I knew that it was a question that you shouldn't ask.
Yeah.
But I was like, how do I find out why he has so much stuff and I don't? Are we poor?
Hey, Mom, can I see your pay stubs?
Yeah. Let me see a W-2 real quick.
Yeah, I remember this was at one point when I was older. I was over at a coworker's house or like his family's house. And it was a very nice house. And there was like some nice art on the walls and stuff. And it was like his father was a dentist, as I recall. And I was like, oh, yeah, some people like make serious money. Yeah. Dentist is one of those occupations, I guess. And you know, considering what dentists charge, it shouldn't be too surprising, I suppose.
Also the highest suicide rate.
Oh wow.
Really?
Yeah, so put that in your pipe and smoke it.
What? Okay, like with air traffic controllers, I get it, but dentists?
Yeah, I remember reading an article about it once and I can't remember what it relates to, but yeah, they say that among, I think, medical professionals.
Oh, okay. Wow. All
right, well,
I wonder why that is. Is it just the monotony, or
if I see one more dead tooth, I swear to God,
I'm gonna Google dentist and depression.
I just did. Statistics put the suicide rate of dentists at 3 times higher than other white collar workers.
Wow.
What the hell, man?
Yeah.
Dennis, what's going on?
Yeah.
Dentists hold the highest suicide rate at 7.18%.
Wow,
this episode just took a dark turn.
It really did.
Wow. And I mean, maybe the Ghostbusters can, go find the ghosts of suicidal dentists.
Exactly. That's the and there we just made a better movie than what we just saw.
Yeah.
Well, that's a question. Would you guys like to see another movie in this series, or should they just leave well enough alone? Do you think there's more life left in this?
No pun intended.
Yeah, I don't think we have a choice. I think it's coming whether we like it or not.
Yeah. I mean, this one made money, so that almost guarantees we're getting another one. But I don't know. Like, as someone who does love the franchise, you know, almost as much as you do, Kevin, like, I was kind of hemming and hawing about going to see this movie. I was like, when I saw the trailer, I thought it looked fun enough, but it didn't get me super jazzed to see it. Yeah. And then after I watched it and it came out, I was like, all right, that was okay, I guess. It was, it didn't have the same magic, but I'm not expecting to have the same magic as the first one, but just as a standalone movie on its own, I thought it was just kind of ho-hum.
Yeah, I mean, a friend of mine asked me what I thought on the day I came out of this, and I just wrote, Bustin' makes me feel okay. And that really sums it up for me. I was like, you know, it was fine. I enjoyed it more than I didn't. And, you know, it pushed a few nostalgia buttons.
Yeah.
I wish they'd gotten a little more creative with the new stuff, and I wish it had some more memorable gags.
I think that's my takeaway from it. They were kind of treated us with kid gloves. Like, they didn't really take any big, you know, they didn't really innovate it as much, and they didn't take any really big steps forward or do anything really, like, anything to sort of push forward this IP.
At the climax, I really, you know, like, that's where I really felt like we have way too many characters here. Because we've got, like, you know, the three original Ghostbusters. We've got Janine suited up as a Ghostbuster, which was, you know, neat to see. And it was neat to see, like, Bill Murray bust her chops about that. You know, he's like, Janine in a Ghostbusters uniform.
Where did she get the name tag so quickly?
I don't know.
Yeah, because that's another thing.
Like, they have a machine?
They have a tailor on retainer.
Look, if we have ghost imprisoning technology, I'll grant them like a some sort of label maker.
Yeah, and like, that's another thing. Like, so does Janine work for Winston, or like, what is?
Or I guess she does at this point. Yeah,
they never made that clear. Like, she just.
But anyway, we've got all the old people there, and then we've got, or I should say, the original people. I don't want to call them old people. And then we've got the new Ghostbusters team there. So that's like eight characters right there. And then we also have Kumail Nanjiani in there too, doing his you know, fire controlling
he's the fire master.
The fire master, yeah.
Which sounds a lot like Gate
Key Master.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm. So it's like nine people in there, and I was just like, that's just way too many. Cause I don't fear for the good guys as much when they're not outnumbered, you know, like at the climax of the original Ghostbusters, it's just those four. And those are all that's standing between us and the apocalypse, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we've got four people, and we might've had Podcast and Lucky in there too. I don't even remember at this point, but yeah. I mean, it was so many, it was just like, yeah, we really need to pare this down somehow.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's not a character that I care enough about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, because when you have that many characters, you can't really develop them enough.
Right. Exactly. And going back to I don't want to beat this horse to death, but going back to their decision not to lean fully into the gay storyline, it felt like they had the opportunity to give us an angle of a character that's much deeper than we have from any of the other characters.
Yeah.
And they just didn't. And it was almost like, I almost was like, oh, well then what? Like, we don't like that. They're all of these characters are just cookie cutter.
Yeah.
Just two dimensional. Like, they gave us like nothing to really like grab into and say, oh, this is a character I can care about. This,
yeah. Like, somebody. It felt like they were kind of afraid to take that risk. Cause maybe they were afraid of, you know, people like, oh, the Ghostbusters are woke and blah. Like,
but if you walk, if look, the three of us are relatively intelligent adults. And we all walked out with the same impression that was supposed to be a gay relationship.
Yeah.
Everybody walked out with that. And the people who were going to be angry about it were angry about it anyway. So go all the way. Just do it and don't be cowardly. And do something good for the character.
just have them like holding hands a little more, have them do like a kiss, and you know, the ghost one fades away mid kiss or something. That could
where she was from wasn't she from like the 70s or something like that?
I don't
think at some point she died in a house fire.
Yeah.
I feel like it was supposed to be a while ago. She could have said like, "Oh, yeah. You know, I would have like back in my day, this wouldn't have been allowed, or like I wouldn't have been, you know, something just to, like." And I thought that's really where it was going to go, because it was so obvious, and then it was just like all the other storylines. It was just like there was too much jammed into the movie that we couldn't explore this all the way.
Yeah. I mean, what did you think? Like, they even introduced a couple more characters with Winston's crew at the new facility that he had.
Terrible.
And and you know, there was that one guy, and I think Kevin, you made the analogy earlier that they were like Star Trek red shirts. Yeah. And they thought they were going to be killed off at some point.
Oh, you're talking about Lars Penfield, playing by James Acaster, or
the blonde guy?
Sure.
The blonde guy?
Yeah.
Blonde guy
who looks a little like cartoon Egon.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
yes.
I was just kind of like, why is this guy here? Do we need another character?
No, they could have combined.
They could have just had Janine working there,
right,
or something.
Exactly. They could have combined everything happening in the firehouse with everything happening in the secret lab. And that would have been an interesting thing that, like, oh, the Ghostbusters now, you know, they're delving into like understanding ghosts better and finding new way to trap ghosts or whatever. Like, that would make sense.
I mean, and hell, also, you know, if Winston has this big high tech facility that's, you know, advancing Ghostbuster technology, why the hell isn't Ray working there? He'd rather run the occult shop.
Exactly.
And
he even says at the end, like, I love this stuff or something like that. Like, he acknowledges
there's a
that
nice scene between
blood.
Ray and Winston towards the end where they talk about like, hey, are we getting too old for this shit? And you know, and that was really nice.
That was a nice little
Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson have a nice chemistry together. Yeah. They play off each other well.
See, I thought that was like a nice little character building thing where we learn Ray. I think they mentioned like, oh, these are like our golden years. We're supposed to be winding down from all this shit.
Yeah.
But like Ray is like, no, this is all I want to do. Like, I don't want to go.
Wasn't it Ray and Winston at the beginning of the second movie that they go to the kids' party?
Yeah.
Wasn't it two of them?
Yep.
So they do. So you feel like they do. And they're also the two.
Ungrateful yuppie larva.
Yep. And they're also the two in Ecto-1 in the second movie, in the first movie, coming back and they have the biblical discussion. So you feel like there is some kind of relationship there.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Guys, I don't want to have to cut this off, but my kid is up from her nap and I have to go.
Okay. All right. Let's wrap it up.
All right. Well, I mean, do you have any final thoughts?
Those little tiny Stay Puft Marshmallow Men that keep showing throughout the movie.
Why were they there? I didn't get that.
I don't know. They're trying to make it a thing, like a little like Gremlins, like trying to sell some toys. Like
in the first one, there was a bit of a reason for them to be around, but in this one, no, I didn't get any reason why we had the little miniature Stay Puft Marshmallow Man again, other than nostalgia.
Yeah, and then the post credit scene with them just stealing a Stay Puft truck, I was like, well, that's kind of pointless.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, overall, this movie was just meh.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. Like I didn't walk out of the theater angry or anything. And I didn't feel like I'd wasted my money, but it wasn't everything I'd want a Ghostbusters movie to be. Yeah. But you know, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Kevin, any final thoughts?
I think we need to put the Ghostbuster franchise to bed for 5 to 10 years and revisit it again in a new universe.
Okay.
You might be right.
So we hear you loud and clear. Female Ghostbusters need to come back.
Yes, that's what we need. Chris Hemsworth one more time.
He was very funny in that movie. I will give him that. I feel like the next, probably what they're going to do next is they are going to do some sort of multiverse crossover thing between the original Ghostbusters, this current Ghostbusters team, and then the female team.
I'm
not saying it's a good idea. I'm just saying it's probably what they're going to do.
Don't put that into the ether.
Don't you put that juju out there, Ricky Bobby.
Exactly.
Because they even had that teaser at the end where she's like, hey guys, who's Zool? And then
And we'll never know.
We'll never know.
All right. So that's our episode, guys. Thanks for listening. Kevin, Israel, thanks again, as always, for offering your insight and your passion for all things Ghostbusters.
Anything you want to plug,
anything you want to promote, floor is yours.
No, you can check me out at kevinisrael.com for my comedy dates. I have a lot of stuff coming up in May, June, and July. So come on out to a show.
All right. Yeah, he's a very funny guy. So check him out. And yeah, we will be back, you know, with our regular episodes, talking about new episodes of SNL. And we'll be doing some more of these bonus episodes as we go for our Patreon subscribers. And if you want to contribute to our Patreon, you can go over to non-productive.com and just give us whatever you can comfortably afford. Mm. And, you know, just indicate that you're doing it for the SNL nerds because you like what we do.
Yes, for the price of a cup of coffee, you can help out some SNL nerds.
That's right. You can also follow us on the socials. We're on Twitter, because we refuse to call it X, at SNL Nerds Show. And you can also follow our individual Twitter pages. I'm at TrumbleComic, TRUMBULL, and the word comic.
I'm at Darren Credible, DARIN Credible.
Kevin, where can folks find you again?
KevinIsrael_NJ.
Nice. Okay. So, well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we will be back with more fun SNL-related stuff. But until then,
Nerds out!
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.